Many therapists didn't follow a set path to get to where they are today. For some of us, we couldn't turn to family to show us the way. So what are some challenges that first-generation college students face? How do they make it? What supports do they need and have? What happens when you have a child and you're trying to juggle work and school with being a quote-unquote good mom? Are you at a disadvantage if that's your story? My guest today, Mary Loon, proves that you are not. Stay tuned as we tackle these questions and discuss how Mary Loon got to where she is today. Welcome to Ignite the Change. I'm your host, Bushra. I'm a licensed clinical social worker working as a mental health therapist in private practice. Before private practice, I worked with first-generation high school and college students across the city and suburbs of Chicago as they navigated their education and careers. My passion will always be with the student and their experience. Ignite the Change is a space where we're able to hear from talented mental health clinicians as they share how they navigated this profession. You'll hear stories of identity, family, education, and more. Through powerful conversations, I believe we can ignite change in the mental health field, and more importantly, inspire the next generation of clinicians to find comfort in the therapist chair. One of the goals of this podcast is to amplify the voices of therapists, particularly therapists of color, particularly therapists who did not follow a set path to share their stories of how they found and navigated this career. Mary Loon is an Asian American licensed marriage and family therapist based in California and Nevada with years of experience working with children, teens, adults, couples, and families. She provides mental health services in the community and private practice. She enjoys working with clients who struggle with anxiety, depression, parenting challenges, maternal mental health, and relationship struggles. Mary Loon, again, so excited for you to be here. I'd love to start out by hearing where you believe your story started.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
Of course, when
I think of that question, right, I think of like basically back to the time when I was pregnant such at a young age. I was an adolescent teen mom. At 17, I got pregnant and left my parents' house because I'm first generation born here, but my parents immigrated here from Cambodia. So they were very strict parents, didn't know kind of how to raise us kids. So I had an older sister, older brother, and then middle child. That was me, kind of very rebellious at that time, right? So it's like wanting to do my own thing, wanting to kind of, you know, explore life, right? So I ended up getting pregnant at a young age at 17, left my parents' house because I didn't want to deal with life, you know, with my parents because of the, you know, their beliefs and things like that. So I would say that's where kind of where my started of my motivation of having my son was. At such a young age, I had to grow up faster, quicker. And that was my like motivation, determination to kind of just go to school and finish.
Wow. So your son, so that moment of being pregnant made you be like, okay, I need to give my son the best life possible. And to you, that was pursuing a college degree.
Absolutely.
And did you do that without your parents' support?
I did it without my parents' support because I had left. I left their house at 17 and a half at that time and decided to kind of like stay with my son's father at that time and his family. And my parents didn't help me financially, but me and my mom had a joint account and she would put like $100 every now and then. We didn't have conversations or communicate like that until maybe after I was in the hospital. And then my sister reached out to my mom and then they came to the hospital.
So what got you into counseling specifically? Mm-hmm.
For sure. I think what got me to counseling is because when I started going into college, I got my first like major was like early childhood development. And so I kind of started with the young 0 to 5 kids. Mm-hmm. And there was a professor, Dr. Kim at that time at Riverside Community College, that was kind of like my motivator, my starter. She was in the helping field. She was been doing it. She also went back to school in her 50s, right? Or 45 at that time. And so she was kind of like the motivator to kind of kickstart, like, get your education. You can do many things with it. She was kind of like the mentor. So we had to also do internships when you're in early childhood, getting like your certificate. So I had to do internships there and like was working with the kids, and I ended up getting hired, you know, doing like doing instructional aid at that time. So I would say that kind of kickstart my profession start really at that time, because I was working with young kids, working with their families, creating curriculum. I wasn't a full-on teacher, but I was the aide, and that was kind of like the start of it at, I would say I did that in 2006.
Wow. Okay. A little tidbit about me, Mary Lou. I also went to community college as well, and I will say some of the best, most memorable professors that I had are at the community college level. So you can't hate on the community colleges.
No.
They know what they're
Yes.
doing.
They have more life experiences, right, while teaching. I think that kind of makes a difference in the teaching field compared to when I went to, a different college.
Yeah, and I know that there are some students that feel like, okay, if I go to community college, and I hear this from my clients that are thinking about it, they're like, Bushra, I might get stuck there. Like, I will not pursue a bachelor's degree. I'll just be at the associate's level. Like, that's not an accomplishment, right? So what kind of motivated you to, okay, now I'm at the community college, now I want to get my bachelor's and eventually your master's.
So for sure, again, my son still at that time, you know what I mean? Because he was young. He was really at that time really watching me, right? Going to school, learn, working, at that time, doing it all really at such a young age. I wanted to be that model of like working hard, doing it right, and getting a higher education. So I went to, after I graduated at the, community college level, I went to Cal State Dominguez Hills for my bachelor's in human services. Still didn't kind of know what I wanted to do, right? Like that. I knew I was in helping fields because I was doing also, my jobs consisted of like the early childhood, the in-home service, taking care of elderly folks at that time. So I kind of always stuck around like in my career or work field in the helping field. And so I graduated at my bachelor's at Cal State Dominguez in human services. And some of the professors there, they were in social work and they were in, they did therapy on the side. So I was like, okay, well, what is social work? What is that? What is therapy? Like, what the heck? I don't know anything about like the mental health field like that. Like that was kind of like the start where I heard mental health or, and therapy and what kind of job or field I can get into. So that when I it was not until 2009, 2010 when I started kind of exploring that more. And actually, like I did an internship at after school program, substance use, parents, families, DCFS removal, like, so that was kind of like the start of my kind of like, okay, now I need to go to school for this. So I did apply for USC 1 year, got in. I was just proud that I got in for social work because I'm also not a school person. Top of all that, while having my child, right? Yeah. So I was like, no, like I couldn't do it. So I dropped out of USC for a semester. So I was like, I don't look at it as like a failure, even though I owe like 20K in my student loans on that. But I don't think it's like a failure. It's more like, okay, it was just a learning experience. It was just too hard. Like with having to do internship in your master's program, having to work, like the internship was 20 hours a week
Oh,
and
it's
then
they
school
don't
full
make it
time.
easy,
No. So I was like, no.
especially for people who have different life circumstances. Oh, they don't make it easy, unfortunately.
So I didn't do that. So I was like, I did it for a semester. I was like, okay, no, thank you. This is not the life that I want for myself, right? Or my family. So then I end up going to University of Phoenix, and their program for therapy or counseling was basically one, you focus on one class every 6 to 8 weeks. So that was more realistic for me, more doable while having a family. And I would only have to go to school on campus one night a week, one or two nights a week, which was way better than me driving all the way to USC at that time from Long Beach. So.
You brought up an interesting point about 20K in loans, and I think that my earlier experiences were working with students of different socioeconomic backgrounds. Many of the students that I worked with were fearful of the loans that they would receive. So if you can speak about that, I think that would be really helpful for any students that are watching this. The anxieties that come from taking a loan, and then also what does that paying back mentally do to someone, right? Because I think that some people are just like, I can't pursue a higher degree because I can't afford this tuition. Honestly, I think very rarely anyone can.
No, absolutely. I say don't let that fear or that number stop you from pursuing your goals and dreams. It's what I want to say, because that number, you know, it's like in the long run, yes, we got to pay it back, or there's also government programs that you can apply for, you know, and things like that. Because I want to say maybe a few years ago, probably pre-pandemic, so 3 or 4 years ago, my student loans on average was about, like, collectively with everything, was about at 110K. So 110K. What I did to kind of reduce that, because now I'm only at 2,800. So
okay,
what I
share your
did,
secrets.
what I did was definitely there's many programs once you get licensed, right, in your state, you know, and you're providing therapy, counseling, social work in rural areas. So when I was living in Lancaster, California, that's considered a rural area. So basically, there's not enough like therapists, you know, the retention rates and things like that to maintain or keep therapists. So look into different national student loans. It's a NHSC. It's a government, federal, state program that you that therapists can apply to. So I stayed at a government clinic for 2 years, was able to get 50K reduced in my student loans. So that was one program. Then I also, during 2020, I also applied for a borrower's defense because I went to University of Phoenix. There was part of a settlement. So I got on that right away and was like, no, let me apply. It did not get cleared until, I want to say, this year, 2023. So my name was still pending the list, you know, and they took that into consideration, because University of Phoenix is also going through some settlement and changes and financial things. So I was able to get that cleared because I applied for the borrower's defense in 2020. And so now I only owe 2,800 right now. That will be cleared. My goal is by the end of this year.
That is amazing. And I think just speaking to so many students throughout the years, I think they have this in their mind that, okay, well, the moment I get out of college, I'm going to have to repay these loans. And how am I going to do that if I have a job that pays me 40,000 or 50,000? And I would say that, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're probably further in the journey than I am. I don't think they get after you like that. There's different ways and different amounts that you can pay back. It's not like, okay, everything is due by X date.
Yeah, absolutely. There's programs, there's fees. You can apply for income driven, you know, reduce it depending on income. You can always go back to school and get it, you know.
Yeah.
So you don't have to pay at that time if you want to pursue higher education. There's many ways. I wouldn't want to be scared of what you have to pay back. Is the thing. Don't stop that from like pursuing higher education, because there's so many programs that people can qualify for, especially if you're also a person of color, if you know what I mean, first generation. You just got to read up on different grants and scholarships and programs. There's money that is ready for people to use and utilize.
What challenges do you feel like you faced in school? How did you overcome? Because I'm not sure about University of Phoenix, but I'm assuming that you had to balance internship with work, with family. What are some challenges that you feel like you faced? And then how did you overcome that?
One, like I said, I'm not a school person. So the struggle was real, right? When I think of school, you know, it's kind of like a trauma trigger, right? In that sense of paperwork and documentation and finishing those like paper, like scramming 20 pages of paperwork, you know what I mean, to finish a paper, not knowing what to even write about, right, at times. So I would say the challenges had to come with the research, the paperwork, assignments, from school and managing that, like staying up, reading, keeping informed,
There's so
like,
much reading.
yes, nonstop. And I don't remember what I read from college. Like, who does? It's
I
like,
don't either.
so it's like, I would say that's the challenge. But I guess how to overcome that is just like doing it. You just have to do it. I think prioritize time would matter, right? In that sense. So I only worked like a part-time job at that time, when I was doing my master's, because it's too hard to kind of work during the week. So I was doing my internships during the week. My work was on the weekend. And at the time, I could even tell you, like, I remember my check. Like, every 2 weeks was like about 200, 300 bucks every 2 to 3 weeks, just because working for the weekend. But honestly, those experiences, those struggles ground me, right, till this day, because I can go back and think about, like, do I really want to go back to what I was making at that time, and absolutely not. So that keeps me grounded in the work that I do till this day, because I'm like working hard. Not I remember that struggle and how that felt in that time.
I think it also probably provides you so much perspective of your clients. I think that those experiences probably have taught you so much about what else is out there.
Oh yeah. For sure. When I went to USC, that one was for social work. When I did University of Phoenix, that was for therapy counseling. But my thing is, like, even with therapy, like, I know it's so competitive. Like, still to this day, it's like, oh, are you social work or therapy? Honestly, they do the same similar work, even in practice. Like, I'm in a group practice. I work with social workers and therapists. They're doing the same thing. You know what I mean? I think social workers have a better advantage though, because they're more known in the world still as social work, and they can get different job opportunities. Like, for example, the VA hires more social work versus therapists. But it's like, and if you want to be in a hospital setting, you kind of have to be a social worker, so it's different. I mean, more opportunities for social work, but therapy, counseling, they kind of do the same work.
And we're both good at what we do. So what are some things that you think that future college students, specifically future counseling or social work students, what is some advice that you have for them going through what you've been through?
Volunteer. I say volunteer, get the
Really? Okay.
experience, internship, even if it's just a few hours a day, right? You can learn so much from volunteering in different organizations, like whatever you're passionate about, right? If it's working with the homeless, if it's, working with families, if it's working with, find that population that you want to learn and grow from, volunteer. If it's helping at food banks, right? If it's helping at just any kind of social services, like field, volunteer. I would also say documentation, right? Change your relationship with documentation, like your mindset on it. A lot of times I work with a lot of people, they're like, oh, I hate documentation. I don't like to do this. And guess what? They struggle with completing it, right? I see a lot of clients every week.
You see a lot of clients. We'll talk more about that, but
Yes, but I'm never late in documentation, because my mindset had changed and shifted from how I think and view, like, documentation. Just get it done, just do it, don't wait. Because the longer you wait, the longer it creates more anxiety. You can't sleep, you start thinking about what you have to do. So when you change your relationship with, like, this is part of my job, my role, right? And if I didn't see that client, or I didn't document, it didn't happen, right? Like, so my mindset on documentation is what I always kind of talk to people about, like coming out of school, graduating, new students, you know what I mean, that are into school. And, because some of my clients are even, they just graduate with their master's. Some of them are therapists, So I still kind of help or assist in some kind of way with just making sure that the mindset, I think it's a real thing when it comes to, like, getting the work done.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned documentation, but even more so, my eyes widened when you said volunteer, because especially in the programs that we're in, you have to go through an internship. But I guess what makes you different is did you run the extra mile? And did you meet, and you can meet so many great people through volunteer
Absolutely.
experiences. And so I think that's a wonderful point. I think that what I'm, this whole conversation has been so, so good. But I think that what I personally am most excited about is what you're doing now. So can you tell people what you're currently doing? I mean, you are hustling. So tell me more about that.
Definitely. I think now, like, I balance. So I'm also married. So I have a husband. I have a daughter now. So she just turned 11 this weekend. So she just turned 11. And then my son's older. So, you know, he's out of the picture right now since he's older and takes care of himself. But I'm also a grandma. So I have bonus children, adult bonus children. And so got three grandbabies and one on the way. So I'm busy. As in having a family, you know, managing that time. While also I have my business, my private practice, I've been doing that for over 2 years now, and a group practice that I'm a clinical manager at. Plus, I also see some clients there and supervise some of the associates. Plus, also I'm support for licensed staff there. So if they have questions on certain things, certain cases, consults, I do group consults 2 times a month. So very hands-on, like in the hiring process. I do a lot of different, I wear a lot of different hats there, and but just in general. And then on top of everything, trying to create content for social media, right? I don't plan it. I just kind of go as I flow, whatever thoughts come to mind. I'll post a reel. Like some of on my therapy page, I love Therapy 661. My most like view pictures or videos are the ones that I'm playing basketball or going to Target. Like, really? This is a
we
therapy
love Target
page,
runs.
right?
What can we
I know,
say?
right? So it's like, I just post, you know what I mean? And I'm that type of person that like, don't overthink it. Like just share whatever I feel, what's on my mind, put it in there and go with the flow.
But I think that's what makes your content so genuine and real and outside of the typical therapist influencer, that it is just so real.
Thanks,
it's what everybody is doing. I'm going to Target too, like, what did you buy? And so it's just real, which I personally really appreciate.
Yeah, and I also get clients that way, believe it or not. I'll get messages and I'm like, oh, I found you on TikTok, or I seen a video or this and that. I'm like, sure. I was like, they're like, you have openings. I'm like, yep. And then I send them a link. They'll sign up. So it's like people see, they always say, I see your videos. It all relates to me, right? On just even parenting, on motherhood. So it's like, I don't even have like a niche per se, but like, I know we're laughing about it before. I was like, cheaters find me, relationship people find me. Like, I don't know. Like, I guess I attract like a certain type of clientele, right? But I love working with relationship folks, like couples. Like, believe it or not, like I refer a lot of couples to other colleagues, but like some I decide to, because I only can manage a few couples at a time, you know what I mean? You have to just know your limit. I'm not saying I don't work with couples completely, but I refer them out because some colleagues have a passion for that. Like, I like cheaters, relationships, like working towards that, like that kind of component. So if it's like cheating, absolutely I'll work with. But
that's amazing, because there's some therapists that are like, I'm not working with fighting couples in my office, no way.
I know,
but we need therapists that actually really genuinely enjoy doing that type of work. Early on, how did you market yourself? Because I think that's an anxiety that a lot of early therapists have.
I would say just do it. Like, I learned Canva, like how to do that. Like, you know, I got the pro version. So pay for the $14.99, you know, version.
Yes,
of
the
it.
Pro version is very good.
Yeah. So it's like it helps. And then so look at different things on Canva, on posting content, information that you want people to know about. So on like my free time or when I get cancellations, I'll make a Canva post. Like, I'll like, okay, what do I want to talk about today? What comes to mind, right? Do it, post it, and go, right? Type of thing. I don't have like, you know, people say, oh, I schedule it My brain don't work that way. My concept, I just kind of like go as I, you know, topics that come to mind or themes that I hear, you know what I mean, when I work with the clients.
I'm still stuck on how you're balancing everything. So what does your day-to-day schedule sort of look like, and how do you prioritize and all that good stuff?
For sure. So my day kind of starts like at 7 o'clock. Well, 6 o'clock waking up, right? Because I wake up an hour earlier typically to get ready to kind of start my day. I listen to a podcast and sometimes in the morning in the shower to kind of get my day going. It depends, right? Because my routine sometimes in the morning can be different. Sometimes I'll go on a walk if I have some time. Sometimes if I start my sessions. So, but I really kind of start with my week. So I list down my sessions, my day, what I got to do, my priorities, and makes notes for myself. So organizing my day is what kind of keeps me going and grounded. So I start at 7 and I also plan breaks in my day. So like literally block off on my calendar so that I don't get like clients scheduled at certain times, you know, like prime example, it's like 1 o'clock. I better eat by that time, right? You know, so I block off that. Or like even 3 o'clock and stuff like that. Like, so then I can do maybe some admin stuff or documentation before my day ends. So literally, it can be I schedule at least 10 to 12 clients. I don't see all 10 to 12 in a day because of cancellations, no-shows, rescheduling, or it's meetings. It's a mixture. So when I say 10 to 12, it's sometimes my group meeting supervision is not just clients, you know, and so I try to schedule from 7 to 7. The reason why I can do it all is because I have a supportive household. Like my husband is my rock. He's a cleaner, he's an organizer. He My type of clean and his type of clean are different. We laugh about that all the day because he's a cleaner, but he's my support system and motivator, right? He's the one that kind of got me to like, hey, you need to do your own, like, kind of helping me see my worth in it, you know? And so, and he takes care of everything else. Like he'll pick up our daughter from school, which that helps, you know? I take care of the drop off. So, because that's what's important to me is the morning drop off. And I hate the after school pickup, and he's okay with it. So, yes, I was like, I just complained about that last week, you know, with him. But I'm more of the like, I like the morning person, like the morning because she can go, it's not a long line. And, you know, because parents are late for school. So it's like, so, and I'm there like 10 minutes early waiting, like, okay, go, bye, leave. You know what I mean? I take care of the morning drop off and he takes care of the night. So that's the reason why I can do what I do. But so I block off that time. But also, like, if I want to do something, like if I want to take time off, I'll rearrange my schedule, tell my clients, hey, I'm not available Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Like this weekend, I'll be going out of town. So it's like I rearrange my schedule. I think that's the power of being in your own practice, having your own business, because you can really take as much time off you want, cancel if you need to. Not that I like to cancel, which I don't. Like I only cancel if I'm really sick, if anything. Other than that, like I like to keep my sessions consistent going and scheduled, and I'm actually full for like every 2 3 weeks at a time. So clients already know not to even reschedule or cancel like that because of my availability. If they cancel that scheduled appointment, they can't be seen until the next 2 weeks.
And for those that are watching and are curious about private practice and owning your own or joining a group practice, you bring up an excellent point about having your own practice and being able to take time off a little bit more freely. And the reason is because for group practice, there's a cut. You don't collect the complete, I don't know, insurance payment, whatever that is. Versus in a group practice, your practice, there's benefits definitely to working with a group practice, but they do take 40% or 50%, sometimes 60% of your of the
The pay.
difference of the pay.
For sure. I like the group practice, especially if you're, for one, trying to figure out like what you want to do out of community mental health, right? I did the group practice before I started my business. I did that for 2 years, actually, group practice. Did that for 2 years, got my feet wet, right, from learning about it, you know, learning the different ways, like just even marketing, right? The referrals, how to get your referrals, how to talk about it. I was actually a referral manager in my previous like community mental health job.
Oh,
So
good.
that already kind of helped, right? With like even how to be customer service when people are calling or do you want consultations. I myself, right? When people call, reach out, like I'm the same person if you were to talk to me. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, like the concept, I'm not any different. I'm not trying to sell. I also encourage people when I'm doing the consultations to reach out to different people, different therapists, to see who you connect and vibe with.
Yeah, and I think people sometimes are sensitive to that, and I understand why. But just like how if we're a client, we're looking for a therapist, there's people that we will talk to and we'll be like, oh, this person I vibe with, but I think this person has the skill set that I'm looking for. So it's the same thing that we're not everyone's fit.
For sure. What I do also is I'm religious, so I pray. I pray for the right clients to find me, believe it or not. Like, you know, and I manifest that, right? Like, you know, I kind of pick and tell, like my, you know, when I know I got opening, I'm pretty full. Like, and literally refer other people to my colleagues. And I have a list of referrals that people that I know that might be good for working with certain clients. So I can always send that referral to people right away. But I pray for the right clients to find me that I want to work with. And believe it or not, every time I even just say that prayer, and mind you, like three people magically come out of nowhere, right? But you know what I mean?
You want to make sure that you're evaluating fit for sure.
Absolutely. I think it's so important if you have faith believing that and kind of always take that into consideration, right? Is that you find the right clients that they want to work with you and that you want to work with them is the biggest thing because it goes both ways.
Yes, and to your point about your schedule, I'm just thinking like I think the reason why you're able to manage your time so well is because you genuinely love all the clients that you're probably seeing and
Yes.
that you're excited about it. And I think as long as you're excited about it, you can make any type of schedule work.
Absolutely. You have to have that passion. You have to love what you do is the thing. It doesn't, you don't want to make it feel like, oh gosh, I gotta wake up. I gotta see all these clients. Like when you already have that mindset, it's like your day's gonna go horribly wrong, right? In that sense. Like I look at my schedule, right? It's like, oh, I get to work with, you know what I mean? And I love that about being able to wake up and kind of enjoy the clients that I have, you know, the enjoy the clients that I have and enjoy, you know, like I learned a lot from my clients as much as they, you know, learn things from me. It's like sometimes when I'm thinking like, gosh, am I even doing good work? They'll send me like, hey, I'm doing my homework. Like, you know what I mean? Or, hey, here's a picture of what I'm doing today. This is what we talked about, right? It's like, so it's like, it's very validating, like knowing that, like, okay, even if I feel like, gosh, I don't know what the heck I'm doing sometimes, right? It's like, obviously, just being present, being there, being consistent, you know what I mean? And I always say being consistent because I've heard stories where therapists would just not be consistent, show up, cancel. I'm like, I don't do that. Like,
No,
you
I
know,
don't understand how people do that to clients that actually
I
are
know.
really in need of therapy. All right. So I personally appreciate you bringing up fit. I think that's super important to our field and to honestly to avoid burnout as well, which is very real. I guess my last question, or I think this is my last question, is from all of your experiences that you have, be it in college and the professional world, what is something that you feel needs to change in our counseling world? What is something that, would make it better?
I would say if you're dealing with insurance, the pay, right? The pay for therapists and professionals, number one, I think is the key thing. Another, like increase the pay or insurance like reimbursement. Another is don't make it so, the second one would be like, don't make it so hard or complicated for clients to seek the therapy services, right, without pre-authorizations, without, you know, a limit on their sessions. I think that's a number one thing, because I know, for example, like Kaiser, they'll say, oh yeah, only 23 sessions, right, within the year. 23 is nothing, like, for people that need services, you know. So don't put no gap or limit for clients seeking services, you know. Allow people, like, if they do have insurance, especially because a lot of people do have insurance, or like, don't make it so complicated for people that if they have Medicare, right, or different services, like the different types of services should be for all, right? Make it accessible for everybody. If a client that has Medi-Cal wants services for, you know, with a private therapist, allow Medi-Cal to pay that, right, fee and their reimbursement rate, versus having them get a different type of service at a free clinic, you know, is the biggest thing. Just accessibility for everybody.
I know a big debate on social media with therapists is because there's a lot of therapists that do not accept insurance. And I mean, it's such a debate online about, you know, if I accept insurance, that's not very accessible. If I don't accept insurance, that's not very accessible. And so who's winning that argument? I mean, it's definitely something that insurance companies need to change, though, so
For
that
sure.
therapists feel like they're being treated and paid fairly.
Absolutely. That plays a big part, right, in making sure that, you know, accessibility. For me, I want to make sure that I'm accessible for people, right? So that's why I do take insurance. I don't see myself just doing private pay and having a certain rate, you know, to each his own, right? Like, I'm not hating on people that can set a fee, right? You know, I barely don't like even getting co-pays and things like that from people, right? So it's like, you know, to each his own, right? But for me, it's just like, I don't see myself just doing like, oh, private pay clients and not seeing, you know, services. For me, I want to be able to provide more reach, more services for people. I'm also licensed in California and Nevada, so I see a range of different types of populations and people. I'm also on different like EAP platforms because I like that short-term therapy approach, you know, and it definitely, it's employer-based, you know, fees, which I love, you know, that they offer that, and it's different clientele. So I like to be able to service like a lot of different varieties, not just private pay, because in the long run, I think in the long run, that doesn't work for me.
Yes, and maybe it's also client fit too. Maybe the clients that you want to see may not be able to pay 200 per session. Maybe they're the people that do need to use their insurance or have EAP or need a sliding scale. And so thinking about all of that before you're like, I'm going to do private pay is important.
And think about that, right? Your business model, right? That's what I would encourage people to check and see. What are your numbers? What are you okay with? What are you not okay with? For me, I like to schedule a lot of clients at that time. And if they show up, they show up. They don't. Sometimes they don't, right? And that's okay. You know, I'll find other things to do with my time, believe me, you know. But definitely, I like to schedule a lot because, for one, I'd like to know my numbers, right? Like, what am I projecting for the even just the week? What am I looking to, you know, my compensation, right? Like to make at the end of the week or the day. So that's why I schedule. You got to know your own number, what you're okay with, what you're okay with making, what you're not okay. Just because I take all the insurance, they all pay differently. You know what I mean? Different platforms, different things. And so I'm okay with that because I'm like, I'm able to service different types of people, right? With different insurances and different brands. So, but you just have to know what your numbers and you're okay with.
That's good to know. Okay, actually, promise this is the last question.
It's okay.
Because I'm just thinking that, you know, I asked you for advice for any college students, but generally, you know, people who are in this field think about like the therapist that is a year into this and is feeling a little burnt out or unmotivated or is feeling like, oh my goodness, I'm not getting the amount of clients that I want. What is the advice that you have for them?
Believe that you can. Believe that you can get wherever you want, right? Whatever your goals and your vision, you have to believe it. Because if you don't believe it, it will show. It will come out. Like, you know, just the confidence in your abilities and yourself. Because again, I'm a clinical manager. I work with a lot of staff or, you know, associates or interns that sometimes don't see their belief and their potential. But I do, like, you know, if you know what I mean, that I can see that I work with them, like they write clinically well. They, you know what I mean, can market their own clients and get their own through Psychology Today even, right? And do their own consultations. So it's like, I'd say believe in yourself is number one, because if you don't believe in yourself, the clients that you work with, how are they going to believe, right? Because they can really genuinely know and feel like you can't hide that. Like you're, you know what I mean? And if it's something that I don't know, I will say that, like, hey, I don't know that answer. I don't know that question. Let me find out and then I'll email it to you. You know, I'll text you something, but I don't even know what that means. Like I will definitely, I'm very transparent. If I don't know something, I don't pretend to like know everything, because I don't, you know. I'm always learning, I'm always reading, I'm always listening to a podcast, I'm always continue to learn and grow, even after your degrees, after your college, like after you finish school, there's always something to be learned and, you know, taught, and being open to doing that.
I love how you speak on that, because I think confidence, it's sort of like you said, it shows in our clinical settings, but also the way that we interact with clients. Boundaries come to mind when it comes to confidence. I mean, if you are struggling with your confidence, it will show in how you set your boundaries with your clients, which is probably one of the most important things in our sessions, is how do we keep our boundaries tight, and also be compassionate and empathetic and all of that good stuff.
Absolutely. I'm on a time frame, even with my sessions. Like, I'm like, okay, it's time to wrap up, you know?
Yeah.
Because that 10 minute mark, right? Got to use the restroom, drink water, like take care of yourself. That's my self care in between my sessions, right? Like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, I have to do that and stick to it. So the clients know, like, hey, we got to wrap up now. It's almost time. So it's like, it's something that I don't even have to say as much, because they know, you know, the closure at the end, you know, and recap. And so, but you got to take care of yourself. I think self-care, I know we didn't really talk about self-care, but self-care plays a big part in doing the work that we do and continue to do the work. Like you said, you went to the gym before, right? Like, that's awesome. Like, you have to find that time to do certain things that you enjoy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Marilyn, I'm so happy that I got to get to know you. And I know that people watching this are feeling like, okay, we can do it too.
Do what works for you at the end of the day. That's what I want to like leave off of. Do what works for you. Don't compare yourself to what other people are doing. You know what I mean? It's more of like, if you want to, you know, learn from it, like if people want to learn from me, they ask questions. I still help out people like to this day. Like, I've helped, I think, 6 or 7 people open their own private practice just on average and get started. And so I help people. I don't charge, like, you know, I don't charge no consultation fee or anything. I always tell people I'll take donations in Amazon gift cards because I love Amazon. But like, definitely, you know, ask questions if people have questions, like reach out, you know, if needed. So
you are a resource of many and in many ways, which is amazing. So I think even therapists who are watching this would benefit from having a conversation with you.
Students, anybody, like, you know, if they're thinking about getting into the field, just anything, you know, that people have. So I'm always helpful, opening, you know, to help people learn and grow, because the same way I got started, I asked a bunch of questions. I reached out to different mentors. I learned from other people, you know. So definitely, I continue to pay it forward, pass it on the wealth and knowledge. I don't gatekeep anything. Whatever I do, I post, I share, you know what I mean? And I think that's important.
Well, thank you so much. And hopefully people will reach out to you, follow her. You are a woman that wears many hats, and I think so many people would benefit from you. So thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. You take care. Get back to
you too.
Work.
I know, right?
Thank you for listening to this episode of Ignite the Change. If you'd like to connect with Mary Loon, feel free to follow her on TikTok and Instagram at ilovetherapy661. If you are someone who is interested in therapy and believe Mary Loon would be a good fit for you, she is accepting new clients who live in California or Nevada. Please visit her website at healingheartsmentalhealth.com to learn more.